is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
6:13 now. Paul Conrad joins us from Channel 9. Good morning, my friend.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm great.
Listen, I was watching the Steve Harvey kid thing last night.
Yep.
And it's a pretty entertaining show.
Okay.
You know, we do Kid of the Week here.
Oh, yeah.
And I love talking to kids. But yeah. I got to tell you something. If anybody deserves an award, it's you. The Friday kid weather thing you do.
Thank you.
Is a delight.
So cute.
It's a delight. And Friday, McGill was doing the kid weather thing. I don't know if you noticed, he made the kid cry.
Yeah. Word had gotten out. Yeah. Well, he yells at kids
it's
a lot.
It's isobars! Yeah. Isobars!
And that's what was going on air. Behind the scenes, apparently, was even worse.
Yeah, so that was sad. But I'm sure the kid will grow out of it. That's a therapy.
Eventually, story. Yeah. That's you got to keep these guys employed.
But do you have a delightful anecdote, a story that you like to tell about a kid from Kid Weather through the years?
You know, there was just one kid that keeps standing out in my mind. His name was John Kelly. He was one of, like, maybe the first 10 ones that we had. And the beauty is if you can get them, like, when they're 7, 8, 9, they kind of lack that self-awareness, right? Yep. So they are just totally into it. There was nothing specific that he did to make it a great story, but there was something about, like, he had no concept of himself and could not have been more thrilled about everything that was going on. It was just awesome.
Which is tremendous, yeah, because what you see invariably are these little kids, and they range in age from what?
I think we go 7 to 11 here or something like that.
And they stare at you like you're some sort of godlike figure to them.
Right.
And they don't care where the camera is or what's going on, and that's great because they're a little kid. But they also have that little kid thing, which I love, where they don't know what to do with their hands.
Yes.
You know, they're hands are all over. They're just all over the place. They're crazy. Usually they're somehow tightly stuffed in their pockets.
Right.
Or, you know, wrapped across their chest. Anyway, it couldn't be a better segment.
Thank you.
And I encourage people to watch it.
Thank you very much.
Friday mornings,
we're proud of it.
Channel 9 News. Now, how do people, you know, where do you get the kids?
Yeah, that's a little complicated because everyone wants to have their kid on.
So it's just people that know you?
Yeah, it's all family members. Now, the way we do it is we've got this relationship with the Weatherbug Network. And so we go to schools that have that Weatherbug Network and say to the principal, send us your best kid. Tell us who you think is your best
kid. Oh, that's good. So the schools pick them.
Then the principal has to pick it. That way
you're off the hook.
We're off the hook, and we don't have to get into it.
How many times at parties and various places has somebody come up to you and go?
Literally every day.
Yeah.
Everyone's
trying. Hey, Paul, I've got a kid.
Can we do it as an auction item? And I wish we could. It'd be fun.
Cute.
But it gets really complicated if we start getting into all that stuff.
Well, you know, my granddaughter's pretty smart. She's only 14 weeks old. Is she ready?
She'd be great. Yeah, bring her on.
Yeah.
Every so often, we do things for friends.
Yeah. And, of course, you do it for me.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, buddy. I just want to congratulate you on
that. Okay. Hey, listen. Yeah. One last thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Happy birthday to me yesterday.
Oh, was it yesterday?
Yeah. I know it snuck by.
Wow.
But I know that when I get home, you're going to have the cake and everything ready. I know you like to do that delayed gratification thing with
me. I really do. It's always a late birthday thing on the show, and I have your bath drawn tepid.
All righty.
Always tepid.
I look forward to climbing on in. I'm up to 3 baths a day now. It is the best thing ever.
You don't know this about Paul Andrea, but he smells like a field of lilacs.
He does.
Yeah.
Potash, garbage pail.
I get a whiff of that when he's in the weather office on the weekends. I'm like, Conrad was here.
Well, I'm trying different flavors for each bath. You know, I've been doing some cinnamon in the mornings.
Yeah, it's good.
The rose is nice, too, Paul.
I've been doing lime lately also, which is really
What
nice.
Did the kids do for your kids? What did the kids do for your birthday?
You know, we had a nice time. I'm trying to remember what exactly happened. Someone got me a cane.
That's hilarious.
Any macaroni necklaces?
No, none of the homemade stuff. I think we're kind of moving through some
that had to be
stuff.
Klaus. Klaus is old enough to get you a cane.
Yeah,
Klaus would think it was funny.
Kind of landed on me in a...
That's
not
fantastic.
Not such a great way, but...
What do you mean? Literally landed on you, or just the way it felt?
The combination, right?
Yeah,
I am getting up there.
Yeah, you're nearly dead.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, thanks, buddy.
I got to run.
Okay,
thanks,
Paul.
See you when I get home.
Okay, toodles. It's Paul Conrad.
You know, I love that segment with the little
really
kids
good.
And think that's got to be difficult because they stand in front of the green screen.
Yeah.
So they're looking at the monitors and trying to figure out, you know,
you have to do everything in reverse.
Yeah, where North Dakota is and where the isobars are.
It's isobars!
It was funny.
McGill, we didn't make a kid cry, as far as you know.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Together we'll take back the state legislature. And in 2018, we will defeat Scott Walker.
Democratic field. consists of a wild-eyed socialist with ideas that are dangerous for America and the world, and Bernie Sanders.
In the great state of Wisconsin, the last poll that I saw had us beating in Wisconsin Trump by 19 points.
I think we're going to win it. It looks like we have a lot of votes. This is going to be something special.
It'll be a big day tomorrow. The Wisconsin primary, crucial to the Stop Trump movement. And of course, you know, it's almost like you have a disease and the treatment is worse than the disease. Because if it ain't Trump, it's Cruz at this point. This is why it's important to keep Kasich in a race. At Jason M.D. Stein is where you follow Jason Stein on Twitter, writes the All Politics blog. Lisa, you still write the All Politics blog?
I am. I do.
All right. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
I am tired of hearing everyone on the news networks analyze Wisconsin. I'd rather get it from you and from your colleagues and from the people that are there. What are you expecting for turnout tomorrow? Is it going to be big?
I think so. Yes. I think there's some good local races in the Milwaukee area. I think we're going to see a lot of votes.
What's the draw outside of the presidential campaign? What's the big hook for people?
Well, there's a statewide race for the Supreme Court. And then in Milwaukee, there's votes for mayor. And there's a very tight county executive race between a more center-left incumbent and a liberal challenger.
Is there Scott Walker, I don't even know what the word is. Does Scott Walker have thump with voters at this point? Does Scott Walker's endorsement mean anything?
You know, in the Republican primary, it does. You know, you might ask yourself whether or not you wanted it in a general election, but he's clearly very popular still with Republican primary voters, and it's definitely a help to Ted Cruz to have his endorsement.
Jason, we've been saying Wisconsin really could be a game changer, especially for Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders. If there is a high turnout, does it bode well for both Cruz and Sanders, or perhaps Kasich even at this point? And Sanders.
Well, it's clearly helpful for Sanders, I think. On the Republican side, I think that's a good question. I really think Cruz has got it on the Republican side. It would be a real upset at this point for Trump to win. And you do sometimes see that in primaries. I mean, polling is not perfect in primaries. But again, the expectation would be that Cruz wins on Tuesday.
Charlie Sykes does a nice job on WTMJ and got a lot of hype, rightfully so, after beating up on Trump for a bit. What, you know, everybody's focused on all the stupid things Trump said last week, but have the people of Wisconsin decided, you know, Trump's a fool, or is there still a large part of the Wisconsin voters that are going to turn out for him?
I mean, clearly he's going to get some votes, and it would not be at all surprising for him to get some delegates in the northwest part of the state, the more rural parts of the state. In fact, that would be what you would expect. So, but Wisconsin we're not a winner-takes-all state in terms of delegates, but you do take the statewide delegates, all of them, if you win by one vote. So that's why this is a big deal for Ted Cruz if he can pull out a win.
Explain that to me. On the Democrat side, it's proportional across the country, obviously in Wisconsin as well?
Correct. So in Wisconsin, one of the difficulties for Bernie Sanders is that even though he seems ahead in the polling, if he wins here, he's not necessarily going to pick up a huge delegate gain that's going to help him catch up with Secretary Clinton. Whereas, you know, even I think when Obama won by something like 16 points here, he really didn't get that many more delegates to show for it. But on the Republican side, it's different.
Republican side, you've got to get 50% of the vote?
Exactly. Well, if you win by one vote in the statewide race, then you've got all those delegates. And if you win in a congressional district by one vote, then you've got all those, like, another three delegates. So, again, if you come up with a big win in Wisconsin on the Republican side, you really do pull away in delegates.
Is there any way to do a winner-take-all?
You know, that's not going to happen.
It's not mathematically possible?
Yes. Yeah, sure. One person could win all the delegates. I mean, obviously, that's Trump, even if he does not win statewide, he's going to win some congressional districts. Kasich might even win the second district where Madison is in. But one person is probably going to pull, you know, get the better part of them.
What's the story coming out of Wisconsin tomorrow? Put on your soothsayer hat. And believe me, Jason, I don't even know what that means. We wake up Wednesday morning. What's the story?
You know, here's an interesting story. Wisconsin, for the last 4 years, has almost always picked the front runner, picked the person that went on to win the nomination. And on Wednesday morning, we could see that both Bernie Sanders and Ted Cruz have come out of second place nationally to win Wisconsin, and particularly on the Republican side, that might reshape the race.
On the Democrat side, is Hillary favored, liked amongst a certain group, or is it playing out the way it plays out across the country, the same sort of breakdown?
Sure. You know, Wisconsin is a pretty white state.
Right.
So that is a challenge for Hillary Clinton, given that she's performed best among minorities. Another challenge in Wisconsin is we have an open primary in this state. So, you know, anyone can come in and vote for Sanders or Clinton. And Clinton has not done as well with independents in Wisconsin polling and in other primaries. So that's another advantage that Senator Sanders has here.
Where are you going to be tomorrow night?
I will be at a Supreme Court candidates party, but you know, we'll have people all around the state.
How does that break down? Like if Hillary Clinton and Trump have shrimp and lobster, and of course the famous Donald Trump steaks that don't exist. What do you have at a Wisconsin Supreme Court party? Is that like Cheez-Its and some Sprite? What do they throw?
I think there's sure to be beer there.
Beer, of course.
Smart. Yeah, if you were smart, you might have some brandy old fashions, too. We drink more brandy than any other state in the country per capita.
That's not a bad idea. Maybe a dish to pass, you know, a nice casserole of some kind. Why not, Jason?
There you go. There you go.
At Jason M.D. Stein and in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thank you, sir.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you.
6:29 News next, 7:20 WGN.
Woke up after midnight. Both my neck and arms were sore.
Dr. Kevin Most joins us. Good morning, Doc.
On my upper lip, there's a
I think he's there.
I've
he's not there yet? All right, you guys let me know when he's there. Meantime, let's all sing.
And I wish that there was someone I could call.
Now he's there. Good morning, Doc. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing fine. Did you have a nice weekend?
I did. Wasn't it crazy? Snowing on Saturday and playing golf on Sunday.
Yeah, I played 9 holes yesterday. The wind was out of the south-southwest at 245 miles an hour.
Yeah, it was crazy.
It was 70 degrees by 4 o'clock yesterday.
But Saturday was the weirdest day I've ever seen.
It just kept snowing in these 10-minute tantrums.
Yeah.
It would snow like it was December.
Right.
And for 10 minutes, it would stop and the sun would come out.
Yeah. And there wouldn't be a cloud in the sky.
It's like Mother Nature had cramps. It was the strangest thing.
It's true.
How'd you play, by the way?
I played okay. You know, it's this time of the year, it's just working on the game. So
yeah, you just go out and you just swing.
Yep.
I'm doing a thing, Doc, and this is important for others. This isn't just about me. But honestly, if you want personal information for yourself, get your own show. So I'm doing this thing, and you've seen me play enough because we play golf a lot.
Yep.
Where I throw that right shoulder. And, you know, you throw the right shoulder, you're going to snap hook it or you're going to snuff it. And but I'm doing something this year I've never felt before where I feel like I've got an impingement of some kind in the shoulder. Or if I'm swinging and I'm not on plane, it's a great trainer, by the way. If I'm not on plane and I swing my normal crazy swing, my shoulder starts, you know, really throbbing. So what do you think? Amputation? What am I going to do there?
No.
Well, I think we should get out and play for some money first, and then we'll figure out.
That's a good point. That's solid medical advice. This is a very important month. This is organ donation month.
It is. Yeah. April, people think about taxes, but we really would like them to think about organ donation. And if you haven't signed up yet, you know, it's very simple to do, and please go and do it. It takes, you know, 2 minutes, if that. And since WGN's heard in many states. You know, it's not like just let's talk about the state of Illinois, but if you go to OregonDonor.gov, in the lower right-hand corner, you can click on your state, and it'll take you right to the sign-up page for the state.
OregonDonor.gov.
Yep.
All right, well, that is good to know. Now, a few years ago, the laws changed, and for folks that think, well, I've been in this system for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, whatever, you need to go back and check to make sure you're up to date.
Correct. You know, it used to be you just signed the back of your driver's license, and now it's an electronic database, so you do. You have to go in. If you say, no, I signed back my, no. Go in and log on and do it. And it's important. You know, when we talk about organ donations, we have 125,000 people on the waiting list for an organ donation, and that's a lot. And we do about 100 transplants a day across this country. But the bigger number is over 20 people a day die waiting for an organ.
Doc, when you become an organ donor, and I think most of us are nowadays, but is there a particular organ? I actually have a friend who, this is not me, truly, but who will say, you know what, I don't want to donate my eyes or my skin or whatever the organ might be. Can you specify, I don't want to donate this or this, or is it all or nothing?
Nope, absolutely. You can specify what you want to donate. And it's interesting you bring up eyes because that's one that people really should consider donating because since 1960, 1 million people have gotten corneal transplants and gotten their vision back.
Is that right?
A million?
A million.
That's pretty crazy. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So you could simply just say that's what I'm donating and nothing else.
Right.
Correct. Yep, you could do that and that's all you would donate. And the cool thing about the cornea is, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, I got to find someone with the right tissue and the right blood. No, corneas are universal donors. You can take the cornea from anyone and put it into anyone else's eyes. So
it doesn't matter how blind you are? I mean, if you have really bad eyes, if you're really nearsighted bad, doesn't matter?
No, because the vision portion of your eye has more to do with the lens of your eye as well as the back of your eye where the rods and cones are that do the vision portion of it. The cornea is essentially a clear covering that protects the lens, and people can get bad corneal disease, and a new cornea will actually give them their vision back.
So, Mary, you could donate yours.
That's good to know. I thought my eyes were so bad, but even if you've had LASIK surgery and all that?
Yes, even if you had LASIK surgery, yep, the cornea isn't really the cornea is very important to vision, but it's really not important as far as the LASIK or as far as, you know, when you get cataracts. You know, those are the things that we can cure with a corneal abrasion.
I scratched my cornea a few weeks ago, went to the eye doctor. I think I talked to you about this, Doc. Went to the eye doctor. He said everything's fine. And he said that the cornea is perhaps the fastest healing part of your body. It can heal in a matter of days.
Correct. I don't know that either. Well, the cornea. The amazing story of the cornea continues next.
Yes. We never knew.
It's a before school special.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN Radio is the sound of Chicago.
720 WGN.
Only Hit the Guy Ever Had. What a great song.
Ooh, yeah.
Grabbing a Jay Ferguson. Thunder Island.
Love this song.
And it's funny as Doc's humming along right now. Dr. Kevin Most, Northwestern Medicine Impact every day. How are things with the Northwestern folks?
Doing great. You know, the family's growing and we're doing really well. It's a fun time to be working with Northwestern.
Very busy time for you, but you sound like you're sick again.
You know what? I think I have allergies, and it's just been kind of frustrating recently.
Are you fragile? You getting a little fragile in your old age?
No, not at all.
Because you had a nasty cold before, and now you got feel like something else coming on.
I know.
You need a hug? You all right?
I do need a hug, yeah.
Right.
Not from you, Andrea.
Definitely. Oh, yeah.
Andrea's mother would be so happy. She's hugging a doctor.
It's true.
All right, we're talking about Organ Donation Month. One of the great problems with organ donation are the myths that are out there, Doc. The myths.
Yep.
The idea that if I want to have, a service for the person that I've lost and love, I can't have an open casket. Talk about that.
Yeah, and that is false. First of all, donors can be any age. So let's make sure that everyone says, boy, I'm 50. I can't do that anymore. No, but any age at all. And the donation, when it happens, right now we have a group called Gift of Hope, which is here in Chicago. And those surgeons come in to do what we call harvesting, and people might take that term as bad, but that's what they do. They are very precise, very talented surgeons, because you have to remember what they're taking out of you or your loved one is going to go into someone else. So they're very careful and they're very precise. So that you can still have an open casket wake. You know, they are not disfiguring at all. They're very, very respectful of the individual. So that's very important to know, because people always think like you did. Well, if I do that, I can't have an open casket, and I want my loved ones to see me before I go.
Yeah, and the bottom line is, if you're concerned that you want to honor mom or dad's wishes, but your brother or sister don't, if mom or dad sign up, that decision's taken out of their hands, and you move on.
It is. You have to remember, it's about what you wanted to do, not about what your loved ones wanted to do. The impact of what you decided. And, you know, the other things, there's no cost involved here. It's not like, oh, if I do this, I'm going to have to pay somebody. You know, all the costs are paid for by the recipient and the insurance companies. And we test all the tissues. We test everything for diseases. We test before we would use them anywhere else. So you shouldn't have any concern about, oh, am I going to give someone cancer? Well, that's not going to happen, so don't worry about that.
Organdonor.gov. Yep. Go there, pick your state. Takes you right to the page, and you're good to go. Can we talk about allergies for a second?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's
should I be taking
allergy season?
Should I be taking a Claritin or an Allegra a day, just as a prophylactic?
Yeah, you know, there's good things and bad things about a mild winter. One of them is that we expect the spring to be a really bad allergy season. We're fortunate right now that tree pollen is still considered low in the Chicago metro area, as well as almost the entire state. But we know that that's going to pop. When you listen to the experts, they say tree pollen is going to be terrible within the next couple of weeks. So really, taking those antihistamines, and straight antihistamines, not the Claritin Ds, not the Allegra Ds with the decongestant, forget about that. You don't need the decongestant portion right now. All you want to do is get that antihistamine level up to a point, so when you are exposed to those pollens, you're not going to get this big response.
Doc, how do you know what you're allergic to? Pollen, ragweed. How do you know? How do you find out?
Well, I bring ragweed by and I rub it in your face and see if it makes you sneeze.
Stop doing that, by the way.
So you can go to an allergist. You can go to an ear, nose, and throat doctor. Those are the two that do the main testing. And it's kind of interesting. They'll do something called scratch tests, where they'll put a whole bunch of things on your back and let you go and try to figure out what it is that you're allergic to. That's important if it's something that you can avoid. If you say, I get seasonal allergies, and it's always in the spring, and it's always in the fall, well, you don't have to go to the expense of doing that, because unless you're going to get shots to try to block those allergies, you know the timing, and you know we have great medications now that are non-sedating. The days of taking Benadryl and sleeping at your desk are over because of the Claritin, the Allegra, the Zyrtec. So unless you really want to know, it's more important that you know the timing of it, and so that you can start taking your medication before they hit.
All right, so what's your advice? Take it?
My advice is to take a Claritin, Allegra, Zyrtec, whichever one has worked for you in the past, starting probably sometime this week. Everyone's going, gosh, this is late. It's really not. We kind of set that bar with Easter, and Easter was early this year. Spring breaks were early, but right now is when we're going to expect, you know, spring flowers bring May flowers. Well, unfortunately, they bring pollen too, and that's going to be the timing probably in the next couple of weeks where it's really just going to pop.
So if you've had allergy problems in the past and you anticipate them, it's a good thing to do. What if you haven't had them in the past? Do you just roll with it?
Yeah, if you haven't had them in the past, you can get allergies at any time. So if you start to feel like I'm feeling right now, believe me, I am starting Claritin this week to see if this is going to help. And the other thing is, people say, oh, the spring is here. Everyone wanted to open up their houses yesterday. You can still do that now while pollen counts are low if we get a good warm day. But once those pollen counts hit, keep your doors closed if you're allergic to things, because why bring the pollen in? So you're better off running the air conditioner during the tree pollen season and then opening the house later after, you know, the grass season probably will start. But keep that controlled environment in your house clean. When you're outside in the yard, come in, take those clothes off, put them someplace where you're going to wash them quickly so that you're not getting pollen all over the house again.
Doc, real quick, how can you tell the difference between an allergy? You know, sometimes you wake up with a headache or whatnot or a stuffy nose. How do you tell the difference between a cold and an allergy or a headache and an allergy?
Yeah, the cold and an allergy is very difficult for us because people come in thinking they have a cold and they say, I want an antibiotic. So first we try to convince them that they have a virus or tell them that they have a virus. And then also...
And once again, please, people, understand this. Doc's very nice about this, but you have to understand this. An antibiotic does never, ever, 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 ever cure your cold. It doesn't work that way.
Correct. So we try to at least try to figure out what we're going to do, which is treat the symptoms. So if your symptoms are, you know, runny nose and that, we're going to try the antihistamines to see if that improves. If it doesn't, you know, we start to get concerned when you have fever of 102 and, you know, we're going to check you for strep throat and things along those lines that could be bacterial. But you really have to treat the symptoms, and that's probably the biggest thing. One other big thing, people take antihistamines and they say, my eyes still itch, my eyes still water. There's a great medication out called Tatinol. It's actually an antihistamine for your eyes. So if you have the eye problem, get in to see your doctor and discuss the drug Tatinol.
You know what we got to do, Doc? And we could start with that notion, antibiotics for a cold. And you could also throw in the flu shot gives me the flu. Let's start making a list just as time goes on of all the myths that you hear all the time that we could clear up for people. We being you.
Yep.
That Trump's a good candidate. You know, all those medical myths, all those things.
Hey, I'm going to speak this morning to a group of women in Wheaton who provide scholarships for college students who are loyal listeners of yours, and they asked me to come and talk about medicine.
That's nice.
So, yeah. So
very nice. What's the name of the group?
You know, I knew you were going to ask me that, and now I'm going to be embarrassed I'm in front of them because that I don't have it.
All right, but you'll tell me tomorrow or something?
Absolutely.
Or text me and I'll mention it?
Yes.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you.
You got it. Talk to you later.
Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine Impact Every Day. We have the longest Hawks Express replay ever. We'll get it in sometime before the end of the show. But back with your news next on 720 WGN.
They view me as, you know, a guy. They don't want me because I don't want money. I don't want their money. I don't want the lobbyist money. I don't want all these people. They're going to be saying, like, you know, we can't get to Trump because it's a crooked system. We can't get to Trump. So I got all these people against me. That's why it's important that I win. I don't want to go in there looking at the second ballot because probably, you know, with the way the thing is, it's crooked as hell.
Do you wonder sometimes when you hear Trump as if there were no one in the room, he'd still have the same speech? He'd just be talking out loud like that into a mirror?
Sometimes I wonder who he is talking to, who he's addressing. Women?
I don't
Hispanics?
Know. I don't know. At Newsboro.
I don't know.
B-U-R-R-O-W, Ryan Burrow, is in Wisconsin this morning. Where in Wisconsin are you?
How you guys doing? Yeah, loading up on cheese and beer because I got three events to hit today.
And
so we'll get started now, right?
Where are you going to go? Where are you going to be at?
So we've got, I'm going to hit a Bernie Sanders canvassing going on here in Milwaukee this morning, then down to the Mars Cheese Castle for a Ted Cruz retail stop, and then back up to Milwaukee. There are actually two events going on. Bernie Sanders is going to have an event over at the BMO Harris Bank where the Bucks play, and then Donald Trump is going to be at the Milwaukee Theater. So I'm going to actually go to Trump because I'll have already hit Bernie, some of the Bernie supporters earlier in the day. So everyone's just kind of slicing their way through the state right now, except for Hillary Clinton. She, Hillary Clinton and John Kasich remain in New York. They're already looking forward to the next go.
There's an assumption that Cruz will win on the Republican side. What's the Democratic assumption?
You know, it's so close right now. The polls show Bernie Sanders with a slight lead. He's obviously working this state really hard. Hillary Clinton's already kind of moved on to New York. She's kind of playing in defensive mode right now. If she can, you know, essentially break even in some of these states, she'll be just fine, won't lose any ground in the delegates. Bill Clinton's actually going to be here later today to kind of rally the troops a little bit. But, yeah, a little surprised she didn't put more of an effort here in this last push, although who knows, the way schedules are, she could end up swooping in tomorrow, you know, on Election Day and hold a rally or two. We'll just have to see.
Ryan, I think it does bode well for Ted Cruz to hit the Mars Cheese Castle, and I did notice your slice your way through Wisconsin reference. Question, though, Scott Walker is endorsing Ted Cruz. Does that even matter at this point?
You know, I think while Scott Walker's numbers aren't great right now in the state, you know, I do think it helped. You know, everyone wanted that endorsement. You know, John Kasich wanted it as a fellow Republican governor. Donald Trump will take any endorsement he can get. So it helped in the long run. I just don't think that the Donald Trump week helped him very much with the abortion conversation that he struggled with. with some of the things he said about nuclear arms that I think raised some flags. And to be honest with you, I don't know if Wisconsin plays well into Donald Trump's hands, just because it is more of an establishment state. You've got Paul Ryan there. You've got Scott Walker. You've got some longtime Republican establishment figures who are, fairly popular in the state. And, Donald Trump just does not play to that very well. I'm actually kind of surprised that everyone's saddled up to Ted Cruz, though, because, you've got kind of a Southern Baptist approach, kind of a more of a preacher tone. And they didn't really think that we didn't know how that would play in Wisconsin, but people seem to be warming up to it.
There is a Milwaukee County executive race where the same stunt Ted Cruz pulled in Iowa seems to be being pulled in Milwaukee County, which is a mailer that goes out that says, here's what your neighbors did, and grades your neighbors on how they voted previously. That seems to indicate a concern about turnout to try to force higher turnout. Around the country, we've seen record turnout on the Republican side. Is Wisconsin going to be different?
Yeah, we'll see what it is. I haven't really gotten too much indication as to, how energized people are right now on either side. For the one thing, on the Democratic side, a high turnout usually bodes very, very well for Bernie Sanders. And that's why he's going to be canvassing not only in Milwaukee, but in Madison and in Green Bay. And, his people are really trying to get out the vote there. So, if he's able to get as many people out as possible, obviously that will benefit him. And that's kind of how he took Michigan. That's one of the ways he was able to do that. On the Republican side, it's strange because, just as many people who are excited about a candidate are angry about another candidate, maybe even more so. So, as far as what's driving people to the polls, I don't know. The temperatures here are going to be about the same as you have. You're going to have in Chicago tomorrow, probably upper 30s, low 40s. So we'll see if that has any bearing on whether people turn out as well.
When you decided where you would go today and you saw Mars Cheese Castle as an option, did that make your decision easier?
Well, I could swing by and pick up some new Glarus. You guys want some of that new Glarus beer that you can only get in Wisconsin?
Oh, look how Dave perked up for that.
I mean, like Spotted Cow,
something. That's good stuff. Yeah.
Dave, I was gonna ask you last night. Did you want me to get some Bulls post games down? They played across the street here. I could have got some Bulls down.
Oh, I know they did.
What the hell does Ryan run on? Is it like Red Bull or something? What does he do? Just never stop.
Cheese curds.
No, that would slow you down, actually. Yeah, that would actually bug
that'll
you.
That'll be today. Talk to me this afternoon after I've been loading up at the Cheese Castle.
This is ridiculous. It's an hour away, and we're all asking for souvenirs.
I know.
Bring Dave beer. Bring Andrea cheese curds.
Well, you guys like it because I already paid the tolls. That's the problem.
I already paid
the tolls, so, yeah.
All right, good luck, man. We'll talk to you later.
All right, sounds good.
Ryan Burrow.
Speed trap going
at
to Kenosha.
At Newsboro. Mm-hmm. So.
I was Newsboro. In Madison.
Like, nope. If you were to animate it, wouldn't Newsboro be like a little rodent that was sniffing around for stories?
Newsboro. He's a little kind of a Newsboro.
You almost called him a rodent there, didn't
no, no,
you?
No, I was going to say Newsboro. He's got a nose for news.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. What were you saying, Mary?
Oh, I was just saying I was in Madison over the weekend, and I saw the cruise bus cruising around. It's kind of interesting.
You got to get out more.
I know. Well, come on. The traffic was
really
bad.
Look, there's
really
Ted Cruz's bus.
Well,
my weekend
like,
is made.
Well, I'm not even voting for him. But anyway.
I would think that would have given you a chance. That would probably make you take another nap. Pull off into a parking
lot. No, I woke up.
Why were you in Madison?
My son lives there now.
Oh,
so
you're
we
going
went
to
hang out. Yeah.
Okay, nice.
It's a great place.
My new favorite, Big Fat Kentucky Redneck. Chris Stapleton. I want you to listen to me now. If you're sitting around and maybe you're a little overweight, maybe you got a beard down to your knees, you're losing your hair, not that fond of showering, doesn't mean you can't be the biggest star in country music. You see how much fun people were having last night on the Academy of Country Music Awards when Stapleton was singing?
Hey, they were having a blast.
They love him.
Yep.
Love him. I've never met him, but I'd like to. He is a good time. He's a big old roly-poly, beard-wearing, redneck, beard-drinking, singing, good time. Actually, he's a pride of that little town he came from in Kentucky. I mean, he's a country music lyric. He's a guy that comes out of this little town in Kentucky, takes his truck to Nashville, starts writing hit songs for everybody, wrote a song for Adele.
I didn't realize you liked him so much.
Oh, I didn't until yesterday.
Oh.
Yeah. Now I do. No, I knew him a little bit. Yeah. But I do like him. And, you know, he was great. Chris Stapleton. That was Song of the Year, wasn't it, Jake? Was that Song of the Year? Yeah. Go ahead. Turn your microphone on. It's okay if you talk.
I didn't know if you allowed me to at this point.
Yeah. Well, I'm still deciding, but so okay. Far it's okay.
Safe than sorry, you know.
And you and Mary, Sandberg, are both country music nuts, aren't you?
Yeah, big time. We were both watching the ACMs yesterday. Yeah. A lot of fun.
Yeah. So
former country DJ here, Whitewater, Wisconsin.
Yeah. Well, those days are over. Yeah, it's time for you to move on.
It's your home in the country, what, WSLD.
You got a little groupie you want to hook up with or something?
Well, the Walworth County Fair, let me tell you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a big deal.
Ryan Burrow's there right now. So Chris Stapleton, Sandra, you agree with me? Is he your new favorite big fat Kentucky redneck?
Yeah, but I've known about him, so he's not new to me.
Yeah, but you like him. Oh, yeah. Is he sexy?
Yeah, he's got that, like...
he's got that I don't bathe Amish sort of look?
Mm-hmm. Like, you're always going to look better than him thing, so you feel good around him.
Like Steven Tyler, David Coverdale, kind of that rugged look.
I love the way a woman's mind works. Yeah. He's so ugly, I'll always look better around him. That explains a lot. 7:24. What am I doing now? Am I going to do this? I'm going to do this, aren't I? Is Janae ready? All right, cool. At Chicago Cares. Joining us on the phone now is Janae Meyers, CEO of Chicago Cares. And we wanted to get a plug in for this while we have a moment. Good morning. How are you?
Hi, good morning.
Sorry, we got a little sidetracked there with the country music thing. You like this Chris Stapleton character? Have you seen him?
I have seen him. Country is not necessarily my thing, but my dad does enjoy it. So I'm always subject to it when I'm with him listening to it in his car.
Sound like you're a prisoner.
I like that, subject to it. That's kind of how I feel, Janae.
Chicago Cares is announcing the largest day of service today. This is the 23rd year of the Day of Cleaning Up Chicago. Explain more.
Yeah, so Chicago Cares is the leading connector of people, communities, and causes across the city. And we have a huge event every year. This will be our 23rd year, but yet the 25th anniversary of Chicago Cares itself. And on June 25th, so let's think summer, let's think sunshine, especially on a day like today. We got a little hint of it yesterday, but in June, we'll have about 5,000 volunteers descend on Daly Plaza, rally around and get ready to go out and serve out in various communities all across the city.
And for people who just maybe are hearing about it, can they help somehow?
Oh, absolutely. We want everyday Chicagoans to sign up. So oftentimes we have corporations, and the bulk of folks that volunteer are corporations and corporate supporters. But I want everyday Joe Chicagoans to sign up for this and to have it feel like a rite of passage for everybody who lives in Chicago to participate and be a part of it. Because if we aren't, you know, cleaning up our own backyards and, you know, getting together neighbor to neighbor and helping each other and really feeling like this is our city and that this is one Chicago, things aren't really going to change much around this city.
That's a fair point. Website or a phone number for info?
Absolutely. ChicagoCares.org.
ChicagoCares.org. Get involved. Clean up your city, people. We'll join you out there after 10.
Sounds good. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Janae. All right, so there you go. Isn't that nice? It's a good
thing. I think it's great because if you notice, remember they used to have, not the Adopt-A-Highway, I guess it was the Adopt-A-Highway, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where different organizations and businesses would clean up kind of an area.
I adopted all of Route 66.
Is that all the way
across the country.
Well, it needs a little cleaning up.
Well, I mean, I adopted it. I didn't say I raised it.
You got to hire people to clean it up.
But yeah, you could pick a section of a highway.
Yeah, I wish they would do that again because you notice if you're on, especially on the Dan Ryan, and I love the city so much.
What about Adopt-A-Block? Adopt the block in Chicago.
Yeah.
Adopt your corner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, whatever the case.
Adopt your neighborhood.
Take care of what's inside your hula hoop, kids. That's what we're talking about. It's 7:27. We'll come back. We get the big story coming up. Richard Justice. Man, is there a better baseball guy than Richard Justice? I can't think of one.
He's terrific.
He's tremendous. Mm-hmm. What do we want today? Do we want a great White Sox story or a great Cubs story? Because nobody tells better baseball stories than Richard Justice.
How about a great Cubs Sox story?
A great Cubs Sox story. What do you mean, like between the two teams?
Maybe. I mean, they play every year. They play six times.
Okay.
Or maybe.
No, that's fine. Greg Cubs.
Well, I'm trying to be fair to both sides.
Well, yeah, but we don't need to be fair. We're looking for a great story.
I forgot. Yeah.
So you want Cubs? Well, I think we did Cubs last time, didn't we?
Because the last time he was on, he was talking about Ernie. I think he told us a great Ernie story.
I think you're right. All right,
so here's what we want, Jake. We want Richard Justice to tell us a great White Sox story today. All right, so please let Richard Justice know that. He's at MLB.com, by the way, and you can read up on him before the show. I really like it when the listeners prep for guests. So they could do a little pre-reading here. That'd be a good call by them. Big story is next on 720 WGN.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It's been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the time. This field, this game, it's a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good, and it could be again.
How many things in life could you dial the clock back 100 years and go, yeah, I recognize that. We don't need to change that much. Baseball's back, kids. Maybe not on the East Coast where the weather's kind of wintry. But the White Sox and the Cubs get going, and there's no better baseball guy for my money than Richard Justice. I love Richard Justice. He's at the MLB Network, one of the great writers of all time, great baseball storytellers of all time, and the right guy to go to today for sure. Good morning, Mr. Justice. Richard, are you with me? Like I said, it's a riveting conversation whenever we connect with Richard. What happened there? What happened to Richard?
Maybe he didn't hear you.
Richard, what happened?
Maybe he was talking to someone else.
Think he was taking another show?
I think he's back.
Does he have show waiting?
He does have show
does
waiting.
Richard have show waiting? Or if another show calls? Is that the deal?
Maybe it was a bad cell spot. He's back.
Richard, you with me?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, hey, man. I'm disappointed you didn't hear the intro because the intro was so glowing you would have thought I owed you money. So how are you?
I'm doing good. I did hear most of the intro, and I appreciate the very kind words. You know, it is opening day is, you know, all that hokey stuff. I think I believe all that. Yesterday when the Cardinals and Pirates were playing, I was clinging to every pitch like it was Game 7 of the World Series. I was reminded how much I'd missed it.
It is all that's good again because spring starts with baseball, and then you have summer. You know, you have hope. You're outside, you're breathing fresh air, and you're seeing a game again that is played the same way it was played largely 100 years ago. And, yeah, it's hard to beat that. All right, so let's get a little selfish here. Let's talk about the Cubs. You were the guy last spring who tried to convince me the Cubs were the real deal. Obviously they were. Can they repeat what they did last year and maybe make it better?
You know, I was with them in spring training. I've looked at the roster 10 times. I can't figure out how it can go wrong. They have depth. They've added experience. They have flexibility to make trades if they have a need. I don't see a weakness. And we are in a landscape now in baseball where the talent level between the top 22, whatever teams, is very close. But the Cubs are the best team in baseball on opening day.
Plague of goats? What about that? A plague of goats. Would that be a problem?
You know, yeah, I get asked that all the time. But I don't think Addison Russell and Chris Bryant, I don't think Jake Arrieta is aware of it, and I'm certain that that's the kind of thing Joe Maddon would absolutely thrive on. What you have is an organization that's been built carefully. They had a blueprint at the right time. They infused it with veteran free agents, and they hired a manager who's the best there is at putting players in position to succeed, not letting it get boring, and nurturing everybody's confidence through the highs and lows of the season.
Yeah, you know what Maddon do? He'd have goat yoga. He'd have a goat mime. He'd make it work. You've been preaching the gospel of Maddon for a long time. Why is he so special?
The players know that he's a... Now, everything is connected to every other little thing. He's had good players. But he knows, the players know he has their back. The players know he's competent at running a game. The players know that he is honest in his dealings with them. And fourth, that he has a certain amount of poise, sees the glass half full, doesn't get rattled in combat, you know, and sort of that's what leadership is. And guys who play for him, players want things simplified. And his rule, really, I don't know what he's told the Cubs, but normally his rule is, I have one rule, run hard to first base. And when you think about it, everything, all good baseball flows from that. We're going to play hard. We're going to play defense.
True.
We're going to have each other's backs. And he creates that atmosphere.
As good as the Cubs were last year, and they won 97 games, but they finished third in their division. The Cardinals and Pirates played yesterday. Pittsburgh won it. You were talking about that, Richard. But the margin for error still seems pretty small. I mean, they still had to win the wild card game last year, that tiebreaker. If there's one thing that, as you look at the Cubs, and you said you've gone over it and you just don't see how it can miss, but what would be the one thing that would concern you, injuries aside, as you look at this roster?
Yeah, well, injuries are the only thing that concern me, but is Addison Russell, Chris Bryant going to take a step back? I think Addison Russell's going to take a step forward. He's going to be comfortable to be playing one position. You look at the back of the rotation, Hamill, Hendrick, is that great? But again, you know, they have guys that they can move. I mean, there's a trade to be made with the Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, I think Jake Odorizzi is going to end up pitching for the Cubs at some point this year if there's a need in that direction. So they're in a great spot. I don't have any concerns. And, you know, you talk about the division. It is the big boy division again. Pirates are really good. The Cardinals love the fact that people have conceded the division to the Cubs. You know, they've won the most games in baseball the Cardinals have the last 5 years. But I don't think they're as good as they were last year. They're harder to measure because they have younger guys, Piscotty, Grizzick, that you can't measure. I think the Pirates are as good. But the Cubs have just grown, and you take a team that won 97 games and you add Zobrist, Lackey, and Jason Hayward, that's pretty strong. And again, Bryant, Schwarber, Russell, they're just getting started. I mean, we haven't seen the best of those guys yet.
How about that? How about that, rest of baseball? I want to get your take on the White Sox and a quick spin around the rest of the league and the other division. Stand by. More with Richard Justice in a moment. All over social media, at Richard Justice. Before we get to the White Sox, let's talk about the East. Washington and the Mets. Anybody else?
Miami has a chance. A lot of young players. If they just leave it alone, let the young – if Jose Fernandez and Giancarlo Stanton are healthy the whole year, they have a chance. But the Mets and the Nationals, in that order, are better.
Giants, Dodgers out west?
Yeah, D-backs suffered a crushing loss. One of the 10 best players in the National League, A.J. Pollock, broke his elbow Friday night. He's probably out for the year. If Matt Cain's good, the Giants have such an unbelievable vibe around them. They're a homegrown team. They have a Hall of Fame manager. And they have a swagger about them. They were gutted by injuries last year and were in the race until September. They have something pretty good going out there, so never, never, never underestimate those boys.
AL East, we always used to talk about the Yankees and the Red Sox, or Red Sox and the Yankees. Red Sox, are they going to get their act together this year?
Yeah, you have wonder about the rotation behind David Price, Buchholz, Porcello, Kelly. We say that a year ago, like how good are those guys going to be? I think Toronto's got a laser show of an offense and a pretty good bullpen. And, you know, if the Yankees can keep their old guys healthy, Sabathia, Beltran, Teixeira, they've got a chance, too. They've been really disciplined, not spending their money, so they do have some younger guys in the farm system. So it's those three, and you can make a case in any order you want.
Out west, got to be KC, right?
In the AL Central.
I said Central, or I should have said West, and I started talking about the Central. Out west, Angels, yeah. Oakland?
Astros first.
Houston. Yeah, Houston. I forgot Houston woke up, didn't they?
Yeah.
Astros could, I mean, the Rangers could win 90 or lose 85, depending on what the injuries, the health situation, the pitching staff. And Oakland has accumulated a ton of young pitching. And like 4 years ago, when you have young guys like that, they can happen in a hurry. Seattle's got a completely remade team, an interesting team. But I think the Astros, the chalk on opening day is Astros, American League, Cubs, National League. Now, you know, does the chalk usually come home? Well, sometimes it does, but mostly it doesn't.
Can the Sox keep Kansas City, within distance?
Yep, because the division is very even. Detroit's got a fighting chance. Cleveland's got a New York Mets-like rotation. And Kansas City. So, I just want to see how many runs they score, how Lowry fits in, all of that. But they've had a good offseason. I mean, Johnson thing. He's as entertaining as any player there is. And Todd Frazier is one of the more respected players in the game. So it'll be fun to watch them play.
I was going to ask you about Rollins, Richard. Is that potentially one of the more underrated moves made this offseason, picking him up as the White Sox did?
Yeah, he's a pro's pro. And when he was good in Philadelphia, when they finished first 5 years in a row, he was really good. And they had a football mentality. They really took no quarter. But it comes down to, you know, he's not a young player anymore. What does he have left? But he loves to play, and he's got a certain dynamic that he's a guy you want to come out and see play. But I'm telling you, White Sox fans are going to fall in love with Todd Frazier. He is the most popular player in Cincinnati and one of the more popular players they've had there, and they've had quite a few players there.
You know, it's easy to get drunk with hope this time of year, but it's been a while, Richard, yeah. As you know, since the Cubs could go. This could be a two-sided story most of the summer.
It would be great. And, you know, you can't give the Ricketts family enough credit for the discipline they showed. I said a couple of years ago to Jim Leland when he was managing the Tigers, I said, the Cubs and Astros have this thing. They're going to tear it down and build it back up, and they're going to be patient. He goes, ha! We'll see. He said competitive people can't stay the course. They're going to go out and sign a couple of old guys first losing streak, but they didn't. Both organizations said, okay, we got a blueprint. We're going to stay with the blueprint. And now it's come to fruition. The Cubs, I can't even imagine what a World Series would be like at Wrigley Field, how cool that would be. Yeah. But we got a chance for that.
Let me tell you something. You got to give Theo Epstein credit because he's never going to light up your cocktail party, but he wouldn't want to be invited to it to begin with. But the guy is a baseball savant.
That's great.
He's unbelievable. Yeah. All right, I always do this to you, but tell me a story about the Whites. Give me a White Sox story this time.
My small role in White Sox history is in 1983 for the dear departed Dallas Times Herald. I wrote a story with the headline, Winning Ugly. And it was all these quotes from Doug Rader, then the Texas Rangers manager, that said, they're so effing ugly. Who wants to watch them play? And La Russa just bought into the story. It became the motto of the White Sox that year, winning ugly. And so that's my teensy winky bit of White Sox history.
Well, you know what? That's a slogan they could run with right now. Run with it. Run with it all day. Yeah. Great talking to you. You're the best. I appreciate it. Can't wait to read your coverage and see you and hear you and have you back. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me.
At Richard Justice, Winning Ugly. You remember that?
There were Jim Leland, who was one of La Russa's coaches, was one of the proponents of that, Tony, and they wore T-shirts that said Winning Ugly. I mean, that was a phrase heard all over this city in 1983.
And it started with Doug Rader?
Started with Doug Rader in Texas.
Hmm. Look at the things you know. This is why it's so important to have Dave around, because, A, it's important to keep Dave active at this age. And it prevents, you know, some of the
injuries. See, that's totally unnecessary. You say something nice, and then you not only balance it out, you weigh it down the other way.
It's a compliment, Dave. It's a compliment.
I thought we'd get mimosas every morning, but still waiting for that to happen.
Mimosas?
Yeah.
Why is that?
You said you keep Bennett around for that. I'm just waiting for the mimosas.
Oh, for the booze.
Well, kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's another reason.
You're the one who said you can get drunk on hope.
Yes, but that was figuratively, not literally.
Okay.
Take the hat off with the two drink holders on either side of it, the Cubs logo. It's 7:53. We'll come back. We're going to play you a long-involved, twisted thing called the Express from yesterday's Hawks win over, who'd they play again? I forget. Who was it? I was there. Who
the
did they
Boston
play?
Bruins.
Oh, that's right, the Boston Bruins. It's a long day. The Hawks and the Bruins Express next, 720 WGN. Chicago!
The Stanley Cup champion Chicago Blackhawks will try to win a game on home ice for the first time in almost a month. This morning, when the puck drops here at the United Center, the Hawks better be ready to play because the hungry Boston Bruins desperately need points in order to hang on to the now tenuous playoff spot they currently occupy. And we're underway here at the United Center, the opening faceoff won by the Hawks. Seabrook then sends it ahead. Panarin over the blue line. The Kane right circle shoots. He scores! Hat trick for Patrick Kane! And that's his 100th point this season! Patrick Kane with a four-goal game scores his second hat trick of the season and is the first Blackhawk to hit the 100-point mark since Jeremy Roenick did back in 1993-94. And the United Center ice surface is literally showered with hats. Olson carries it up the boards, fed it to the high slot to Gustafson. Bumped off the puck, and now Pastrnak's got a breakaway over the Hawk line. Down the slot, Deeks and shoots. He scores! David Pastrnak took a pass that originated in the Bruins zone, got behind the Blackhawks defense, came in on Darling, went from the backhand to the forehand, and put in the Bruins' only goal of the game. It's now 6-1 Hawks. Oh, now another shot they score from the right wing boards. McQuaid let it fire, and that deflected from the slot, I believe, Louis Erickson. Two goals by the Bruins.
Man, what, 7 seconds, 8 seconds?
11 seconds. Boy, oh boy, 6-2 now, favor of the Hawks. Puck knocked away by Hjalmarsson into the corner. Taves has it, tried to spin it out. Kept in by Marchand, top of the left circle, to Krug, left point. Hammers it toward the net, Bergeron shoots and scores! Nice little handoff there by Erickson to Bergeron from near the bottom of the left wing circle. He's able to lift it by the fallen Darling. It's 6-3 in favor of the Hawks with a lot of time left in the third. Krug breaking into the Hawks zone down the right wing. Shoot, chest save made by Darling. Loose puck beside the net. Bergeron took it in behind to Krug, left circle. Shoots, they score! In front of the Hawk net, Marchand was battling with Trevor Van Riemsdyk, and I believe he may have tipped this puck past Scott Darling. It's getting very interesting now.
Oh, yeah. 6-4, halfway through the third period.
7 seconds left. The Hawks are going to win it. Here's Erickson into the Hawk zone, right wing side. Lost it. Fleischman launches it down ice. It doesn't matter. The Hawks hang on and beat the Boston Bruins 6-4, and Joel Quenneville picks up his 800th career coaching victory here at the United Center today as the Blackhawks win the original six battle. The Blackhawks 6 and the Bruins 4, and the season series ends up at one game apiece.
Sponsored by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. That's a lot, but there was a lot to get it to. Mm-hmm. John Weideman later. We'll see if he's recovered from that yesterday. He'll be on in the 9 o'clock hour.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
There's something about that that sounds different. It's like Dean's theme is dying. It's like we need a fresh copy of your theme or something.
I had a dream about that song last night.
It sounds warped or something. I don't know. Remember like when you put a, like back in the old days, you put a 45 on and you didn't have the little adapter to be slightly off
right.
center?
It was just slightly off a little bit.
Yeah.
Are you sure it's not you?
Holly, I won!
Are you sure it's just not you?
Could be me. Could possibly be me, yeah.
I had a dream that whatever room that I went into, I would open the door, and when I opened the door, that music was playing.
Dream or nightmare?
It was pleasant, but mm-hmm. after a while, it's like, all right, enough.
People keep singing at me.
Right.
I didn't see any movies this weekend. What did people go see?
Batman versus Superman.
Oh, there you go.
Number one again, 52 million. You know, it's down from the, what was it, 170 million in the opening weekend. That's not a big surprise, but it still was still, you know, pretty formidable.
Let's go to Andrea for a live review.
I saw it, Dean.
Andrea's
yeah.
standing outside the theater right now.
I agree completely with Dean. It's not the best movie I've ever seen. It was slow moving.
Is it the worst?
No, it's not the worst.
Do you like it?
It was okay. I thought it was okay.
Do you give it an Andrea Papagiannopoulos B-?
I would give it, yeah. I'd give it about a B-. You gave it a B, right, Dean?
I gave it B-.
Yeah, I agreed completely because it took
B-. You just have to be patient.
Yes,
it
took a while to get started.
It takes longer than it needs to get going,
mm-hmm.
but once it does.
The ending was great.
How about that, you know, the last half hour of the movie was amazing.
Completely. When the fight between the two of them started, that was when. And I agree with you,
guys,
Gal Gadot, wonderful.
You guys know it's only a movie, right? That didn't really
yeah.
happen.
But yeah. it was, I think, a perfect review.
Steve, when Wonder Woman sings Everything's Coming Up Roses.
Steen.
You'll be swell. You'll be great.
It's a whole different take on the DC universe.
All of Metropolis on a plate.
Who knew you could reanimate Ethel Merman like that? The truest Wonder Woman of them all.
All right, now I have a House of Cards problem, which I'll share with you in just a moment.
Okay.
But first, Mary Vandeville standing by, demanding to update the traffic here in the Wintrust Community Bank Center. You know how Mary can be.
You can travel Chicago. You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 972. Oh, 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 oh.
Top man, pro and steady. To the man, cause he's always ready. East Coast to the West Coast. He is a critic I trust the most. Do I like him?
I think we all remember Dean's controversial hip hop period.
Remember when I was part of Milli Vanilli years ago and I did have that lip sync controversy?
You were the Vanilli, weren't you?
I was Milli.
Oh, you were Milli. I'm sorry. I saw a lot of vanilla in you, and I thought maybe that's why you were Vanilli.
No, Milli, because I was a big fan of The Neighbor on the Dick Van Dyke Show.
It's sponsored, Dean is, not it. Dean is sponsored by Captain James A. Lovell Federal Health Care Center.
Stupid.
Don't call me stupid, no, just because it's true.
I'm saying I am.
What were we talking about before the breaks? Anyone remember?
You were saying that you had a problem
House of Cards. Here's my problem with House of Cards. I got to episode 7 pretty quickly. Dave's on episode 4. Andrea's just starting season 4.
And I've never seen one.
Yeah, and it's really good. But I can't get into this season beyond where I am because all the Trump nonsense is way more outlandish than anything I'm seeing on House of Cards.
Donald Trump has ruined it for you.
Donald Trump has ruined it for me. Donald Trump has made House of Cards like watching C-SPAN.
Wow.
Yeah. And I mean, there's stuff going on House of Cards that you think would be, wow, really?
Could never happen, right.
No. Trump's worse. Trump makes Kevin Spacey's character Frank Underwood, and remember Frank Underwood's bumper stickers, FU 2016? Right. Trump makes Frank Underwood look like the candidate you'd prefer.
Wow, and Frank Underwood's been involved with murder, too.
Murder.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my problem. What do I do about it?
What?
Well, you're the entertainment guy. Fix it.
Let me get a call into Mr. Spacey immediately.
Hey, have you interviewed Spacey?
I have.
I don't think I ever have, and I'm being told by people who know that he's kind of a tough guy, not a pleasant guy.
I have never had any trouble with him.
Well, let's bring him out right now and let's find out. Kevin Spacey's
bring
here.
Him out right now. He doesn't suffer idiots, which is amazing that he and I got along. He, you know, if you ask him good questions, he engages and I've just put a quarter in him to try to get him to do Johnny Carson impersonations.
Sure.
Things
sure.
that I'm sure he's sick of doing. And he's always been very accommodating. I've never had...
What's he like to travel with? Is he fun on vacation?
He's fun. I don't like that he sometimes will leave the cap off the toothpaste.
That is frustrating. Yeah, that's very frustrating. Hey, did you watch the American Country Music Awards last night?
I did not.
I did.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I like country music.
What'd you think of it, Steve?
I like the CMAs and the CMT Awards better because there's more performances, and the two chuckleheads that were hosting it were, you know, a little too involved in themselves. But there was a couple key moments, including Dolly Parton coming out and doing a medley with Katy Perry.
Right.
That was pretty cool.
That I did see. I saw the tape of that this morning. And it just makes me, when I see a seasoned performer like that singing with a relatively new performer, you realize the chops that Dolly Parton has.
Yeah, she's great.
You know, like really, this is a seasoned performer. When you see, you know, some of these seasoned, often performing, like the Grammys, they put, new and old together. And the young people look like they can't even hold a candle to.
It's true.
You know, some of the other people. Not that Katy Perry was bad, but it just made me respect Dolly Parton even more.
Katy Perry, though, there's a girl who can't be more than, what, 27, 28?
Yeah, something like that.
Couldn't be more relaxed in any room she's in. And why wouldn't she be? She's the center of attention, right? Everybody loves her. But Katy Perry comes out into this country music awards situation, and she's just cool. It's her first time there. She was very relaxed about the whole thing.
She's 31.
She did a boob joke about how she and Dolly Parton both have giant boobs. And by the way, the CMA Awards will be done in Katy Perry's cleavage as part of an agreement going forward.
In November?
In November, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Chris Stapleton won the most awards last night.
He's my new big fat favorite fat Kentucky redneck.
That's
him.
That's going to be a new movie, My Big Fat Kentucky Redneck.
I didn't think about that. Sorry,
Nia Vardalos.
Has that been done?
Yeah, that's going to be the next sequel to
Big
Fat
Greek. Great. Yeah. I love that guy.
Male Vocalist of the Year, New Male Vocalist of the Year, Song of the Year, and Album of the Year.
You got a little Stapleton? Mikey, play a little Stapleton for me.
Chris Stapleton. Jason Aldean won the big award of the night. He took Entertainer of the Year. Miranda Lambert won Female Vocalist of the Year.
That's country music, kids. Got a big fat guy with a beard and a guitar. Probably hasn't showered in a month. That's country music.
Just the real deal. Driving in your pickup truck in from East St. Louis.
Yeah.
Cranking.
I grew up with these guys. This is a guy who could channel Hank Williams Jr. Ernest Tubbs, I'm walking the floor over you. Hee-hee-hee, ha-ha. I like him. Big fat country Kentucky Chris. That's what I call him.
What an honor.
It really is.
Yes, Mr. Big Fat. Mr. Cochran is waiting for you.
Sandberg, you're a big country music fan.
I am. And speaking of those awards, and Katy Perry, her nemesis, Taylor Swift, have you seen the new commercial where she falls off the treadmill rapping?
Who falls off the treadmill?
Taylor Swift. Oh, that's kind of funny. It is so funny.
And she makes fun of Katy Perry?
No, Katy Perry doesn't. They don't get along, and that's why.
And life.
Bad blood is written about Katy Perry.
It was?
Oh, yes. I didn't know that. I thought that was about
a backstabber. Come on, Dean, you know this.
I really don't.
I didn't know
I know it.
Really,
yeah, they did have a little. Oh, see, Mary knows.
Taylor Swift gossip the way I should be.
Anyway, the commercial.
To call my little niece and find out, get the latest on that.
We kept rewinding it just to watch her fly
off
the treadmill.
Fly off the treadmill?
There is nothing more entertaining than watching somebody hurt themselves on a treadmill.
You know, I almost killed a U.S. senator once on a treadmill.
What'd you do?
There's a guy from Minnesota, a senator named Rudy Boschwitz.
Somehow I think this is true.
No, I'm not kidding.
I know, yeah.
I walk into this. This is the early 90s when people still read the paper. Here's a good idea. Reading the paper while you're on the treadmill. And he was kind of a dork anyway. And he goes to wave to me, and the paper falls down on the treadmill, like the entire section of the paper. And he steps on the paper, and he flies forward, and he bangs his head off the monitor part of the treadmill.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so I walked around, and I said, hey, anybody seen Senator Boschwitz?
Did you say, are you done with
somewhere?
Are you done with the sports section?
I have done that. You know, it's not easy. It's not difficult to get, you know, tripped up a little bit when you're on, you know, you're trying to get on the treadmill.
I do my taxes on a treadmill.
Cool.
I completely do my taxes. I try to keep the receipts, like where you would keep the beverage container.
I'm going to tweet that out from your Twitter. So
okay, great. Yeah, that's a true story. I don't think Senator Boschwitz is with us anymore, as in the fact that I'm not sure he's alive. Actually, check and see if he's alive before you tell the story.
Killed in his terrible
no, I ran over to help him. He was bleeding. I ran over to help him, and I was thinking, well, this is bad. And, you know, he was fine. Just propped him back up, bandaged his head, said, get back on the
treadmill. Rudy Boschwitz, right?
Yeah, Rudy.
He is still with us, so you might want to hold off on telling
this. Well, it's a true story,
yeah.
So feel free to tell him. Well, not him. He was there. He knows.
We don't want to tell him.
Can you tell it's Monday, Dean? Hey, did you go to the Cheap Trick Show?
Was not the Cheap Trick Show,
but you wanted to interview them.
But we, we spent a half an hour with them.
Well, that's my point.
With the whole band before the show.
Yeah,
they did a show at the Metro.
Yeah.
You know, these guys don't do little small club shows like that. I hear rock the place. We do it. We have video of it. And we're going to show it in about a week when we assemble this whole story, because Cheap Trick is getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, just like the group Chicago. It's coming Friday, the induction ceremony. But we sat down with Rick Nielsen and Robin Zander, and they reflected a little bit on their careers and the induction.
I think the interesting thing about a place like Metro is that there are people that will tell their friends, we're going to Metro to see Band A. and they come and maybe unknowingly fall in love with the band because the experience can be rewarding. But still, it's word of mouth. It's like someone, me telling my wife, Jenny, hey, we're going to go see City in Color. She doesn't really know who they are. They're from Canada. She comes, she sees Dallas do his thing in this room, and she walks away going, wow, that was really something.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was really interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't actually the cut we wanted, was it?
That was not actually Rick Nielsen.
No, who was that?
That was the owner of the Metro. And the story.
Why was REM playing?
That was a story that we did about a year ago.
You sent us the wrong tape?
About the Metro's anniversary.
I'm like, that's not I Want You to Want Me.
Dean had sent on the wrong piece of tape. It's fine. Guns N' Roses got back together this weekend.
Guns N' Roses did a show very similar to the Metro, the famous Troubadour.
Now, if we play this tape, is something going to come on from Devo or something?
Well,
or?
Let's see. This is actually...
That's the tape you wanted.
This is the one, amazingly, that we wanted. This is Guns N' Roses, Slash and Axl Rose playing together for the first time since 1993.
Wow.
And they did like a 17-song set.
What's more amazing, they got back together or that they're alive?
Well, probably both probabilities are pretty high. But they sounded great. Saw a little bit of tape of that, and they're getting ready to... launch their big stadium tour, which will include Soldier Field. They're going to be there July 1st, and tickets for that are going to go on sale this coming Friday morning at 10 o'clock.
Well, buddy, we'll talk to you later, and let me know if anything turns up on the stuff I was asking about in the middle that I've forgotten about.
I am going to call Kevin Spacey right now and tell him to notch it up. Turn it up to 11. Need it to turn up to 11.
Yeah, send me the tape of that call, will you? 8:31, back with the big story next on 720 WGN. Tradition like any other.
Like no other.
No, like any other.
Yes.
In this case, because I'm not Jim Nance and this isn't the Masters.
Okay, sorry.
The Masters. So Nance finishes calling the national championship game tonight. Gets on a private plane, goes straight to Augusta, and then starts Masters Week. What a busy month for Nance.
Yeah, he's been doing tournament games all month.
Not exactly coal mining, though, you know?
You'd be surprised.
You defending it?
Yeah.
Well, it's a lot of travel.
It looks really glamorous. You would think, you know...
No, it is. It's harder than it looks. Mm-hmm. I remember at one point there was somebody, and we're waiting on Steve Sands from the Golf Channel here. We'll get to him in just a second. As soon as he's ready, we're ready. But there was somebody once in this building who said, why would I pay you that amount of money? All you do is talk.
See? There you go.
Yeah.
Not cool.
That person no longer works here.
Yeah, not cool.
And you read the article about Jim Nance preferring burnt toast.
Yeah, what a freak digest show that is.
Yeah, that's weird.
And if it's not burnt enough, he sends it back.
And his wife made a laminated card of how he likes
his
toast.
How he likes it. The right...
Weird.
Did you read the interview?
No.
It's bizarre.
That's just weird.
Nance is a crackpot. He's a nice crackpot, but he's a crackpot. All right, so we'll get to Sands when we get to him, but you have some Masters trivia for us?
Yeah, just a couple of Masters trivia questions.
Let's see if Dave and I know these.
All right, here we go, you guys. The cost of producing each green jacket. What it costs to make each green jacket.
They're not that expensive. Like most things in Augusta, they're not that expensive. They're made by the same tailor they've used for years and years and years. It costs about $100.
Okay, Dave?
$200.
$250.
Ding, ding, ding.
$250. All right, now how about this?
$100 and they made mine.
Of all the golf carts used in the world, what percentage made in Georgia? Of all the golf carts used in the world.
Wow. That's interesting. Is it club car that's in Georgia?
Yes.
And there's one in what's the one in Iowa? There's a big golf cart company
there
in
is.
Iowa.
Yes.
I would say 75% are made in Augusta.
Are we talking gas or electric?
Dave, of all the golf carts used in the world.
All right.
All of them.
How about 80?
90%.
90%?
90%.
Okay. I was closer again.
All right, rule of three. You got one more?
All right, how about one more? Let's do annual dues. Annual dues now for members of Augusta.
Well, this will kill you, and it kills me because I've never played Augusta, though I'm sure at any point I'll get that call.
Yes.
But the annual dues at Augusta are $4. A lot of people don't know that. It's
really
$4.
Not that much.
Compare it probably to some clubs around here.
Yeah, it's crazy inexpensive considering it's Augusta.
$10,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. Congratulations, Dave. You still can't play Augusta.
Okay. All right.
You should have seen the look I got like 6 months ago. I was in Augusta, and I rolled up, and I said, hey, I'm a single. I'll wait. Can I, you know, you got a three going out anytime soon? It's 844. I love Steve Sands. I think he does the best work of anybody covering golf, and big fan. And nice to have you on the show, Steve. Good morning.
Now, you say that to all the guys. Come on now.
Actually, all right, most, but not all. Let's be clear. It's not all. Let's get them.
Before we talk golf, can I just say one thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
I would give anything for my beloved Washington Capitals to face your Blackhawks in the final.
How great a final would that be? That would be tremendous.
Oh, please. You guys have won your cups. Please. I've waited my whole life, 47 years. Please. Yeah, let us get to the finals just one time.
Repeat after me, 48. It's going to be there's an opportunity here for that to happen. And of course, you guys have the dirty commie, Ovechkin, and our Russian players are legitimate, you know, God-fearing, God-loving American types. You got a tremendous goalie. You got a great coach. I mean, the Caps have been great all year.
We'll see what happens.
All right. You got a pick in tonight's NCAA final?
I do. You know, I was thinking it's going to be a good game. I think Carolina's going to win at the end. They're too long, and they'll get out on the break, and they'll get past Villanova. Villanova's good. They're tough. But I think if Carolina plays well, which I think they will, I think Carolina's going to cut down on that. You guys?
Dave just told me Villanova just scored on Oklahoma again. Dave, the game's been over for hours. You know,
by the way, they're not going to shoot 71%.
No, they can't. No, but I do like Villanova. I like Villanova in an upset. How about you, David?
No, I'm sticking with Carolina.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, I mean, would it shock me? Absolutely not.
Okay, so pick one, Dave. You can't pick both.
I'm picking North Carolina.
Okay, all right.
There's two teams playing, you're taking both sides. I like that.
Why not?
Hey, we had a great story yesterday in golf, and to get a first-time winner is always great, but for a guy that's played as long as this guy to win the Shell Houston Open, that was pretty cool, wasn't it?
It really was. I tell you, you know, I was watching it as we finished up. We did the drive, chip, and putt national finals here yesterday on the grounds, and when we wrapped up, I was watching it. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, everybody in golf roots for Jordan Spieth and Jason Day and Rory McIlroy and Ricky Fowler and Dustin Johnson and all these guys. To see a guy like Jim Herman win, fellas, you cannot imagine how life-altering yesterday was for that guy. Not only does he make $1 million, which obviously sets him up a little bit, to be able to freewheel it and play golf, you know, at that level in a different, kind of frame of mind. But it sets up his entire year. It gives him a card for the next 2.5 years, gets him into the Masters for the first time. And that was a huge, huge day for Jim Herman. And not that it wouldn't have been for Dustin Johnson or Henrik Stenson if they would have won, but they've won theirs and they've got theirs. And Jim does not, and he never has. And for a journeyman to pick up a victory like that was huge. And you saw the emotion coming out of him. It was a really cool day for him.
My mother called. She was crying. My mother's a big golf fan. She was watching. She was crying. So
it's hard not to. I mean,
good to pull for the guy. We used to call him rabbits, but this guy's not. This guy's too old to be a rabbit. He's more in your saber-tooth tiger area now. 0 for 105.
He's 38. I mean,
yeah,
grinding forever out there. It's fantastic. It's a fantastic story. I'm really happy for him.
You mentioned Henrik Stenson. How does this guy not win more? He's won what, 4 times total?
Yeah, it's crazy. God, he hits the ball so well. I mean, fellas, it's amazing how well he hits the ball.
He just doesn't close, right? Does he not close?
Yeah, he doesn't. He gets to that finish line, but he doesn't cross it all the time. I think the putter holds him back. His game doesn't hold him back, but I think the putter might hold him back a little bit. Sometimes that putter gets a little squirrely on him, but he's a great player. There's no question about it, and he's going to be around a long time. But you're right. He should win more, considering how great he swings the golf club.
It's funny because, you know, you look back, like right around the time Tiger was exploding, Tom Lehman – everybody's talking about Lehman. Lehman. I love Lehman. Couldn't be a better guy. But I think Lehman won 4 or 5 times total. He won a British Open, but he was always competing. And Stenson's got like 155 third-place finishes. You know, 154 right. Second-place finishes, because so he's always in the conversation.
Lehman got the major, though. You know, he won the Open.
Yeah, won the British Open. Yeah, yeah.
You know it's a weird sport in that regard compared to team sports where – you know, look, Dan Marino, Charles Barkley, Carl Malone, there's a lot of guys in team sports, Ernie Banks, I mean, who never won at all, who are considered all-time greats. In this sport, it's different. you know, there are plenty of players who have won majors who are not great, but you cannot be considered great unless you've won a major. So I'm not saying Tom Lehman's great. I'm just saying that he got his major, so nobody really messed with him anymore.
Right.
Henrik needs a big win. He does. He needs a big win at some point to validate just how terrific a player he is. And so far it hadn't happened.
I would argue that more so than Sergio, he's the best to not win a major. He's the next guy. He's the guy. He's number one on my list.
Yeah. The only reason I would say Sergio is because he has more victories.
Right.
But there's no question he's right there, without question.
All right, I need to know this from you. We've got to take a quick traffic break here, but I need to know this from you. You cover all of them and what your favorite major is. I'll be surprised if it's not the Masters, but more with Steve Sands from the Golf Channel in just a moment. By the way, he's hosting the Golf Channel's Live from the Masters all week at the Augusta National Golf Club, a club that I'm still banned from, Dave.
Yeah. Well, as of this moment, maybe Steve can get you in.
I drove up, and they just said, no, we can't get you out. No.
We'll keep working on it.
I said, do you rent clubs? Do you have a Northwestern starter set? Coverage will air all day, every day through Wednesday, and on air leading up to and immediately following live golf coverage Thursday through Sunday. And anybody that knows me knows I have the Golf Channel on 24 hours a day. So, back with Steve Sands, who's running around Augusta all week. Pretty good gig to have. All right, what's your favorite major to cover?
Oh, this one's probably the one. Coming back to the same course every year, the tradition, we've been watching it since we were little kids, and you seemingly know every single nook and cranny of the whole place. I would think if I had to win one and I had to cover one and I just had to lay around in my boxers and have a beer and watch one, it'd be this one.
So many great traditions. I've only been a couple of times, but the traditions are unbelievable. You know, Dave, this you can't do this in Chicago. You can't do this in New York. You can't do this in D.C., where you're from, and Sands is, you know, still lives.
Yep.
You go to Augusta, you drop a blanket down. Nobody's messing with your blanket. You put a chair down. Nobody's messing with your chair. That's your spot.
Here you lose it, right?
It really is crazy.
Literally, the way they do things here is so different. It's not that it's, you know, people from the north and in big cities like where we're from, in Chicago and D.C., blah, 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 you think it's backwards here. It's not. It's not. It's just traditional. It's just different. It's not good or bad. It's just different.
A sense of honor.
It is. It's amazing. That chair thing is crazy. When you see those people on 18 on Sunday at about 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Chicago time, you think, oh, those people have been sitting there for about 12 hours waiting for this moment. Nah, they run out there, leave their chair there, and then they go watch the golf, and then they file in throughout the course of the late afternoon, and then it's packed, and you see what you see on television. But those chairs never move, and it just says, you know, it'll say Mike or Steven or Bonnie or whatever,
and
people just leave it. It's the craziest thing. It's good. I mean, it's nice.
You know, Dave Ennett grew up in D.C. He used to deliver J. Edgar Hoover's newspaper.
Yes, I did. The Evening Star. The late lamented Evening Star.
I used to deliver the Washington Post until my older brother and I decided we wanted to sleep in one day, throw the comics down the sewer, and then we got fired from that job. My parents were very upset with it.
I never thought of that.
Oh, my parents were like, where's the comic insert? And they're like, we were a little late. Sorry. My dad was so mad. I mean, I could use a lot of words. My dad was so mad at us, man. It was great.
Didn't your dad, you got a family business, too, don't you? Doesn't your dad have a business in town?
Yes, they do. How do you know that? Yeah.
Well, listen, I know Steve Sands trivia.
Wow. I'll get out of here. Yeah, he's. They've had a wine and liquor store for more than 50 years in the city, yes.
I'm telling you, Dave Ennett, Steve Sands is going to be your best friend, a wine store, wine and liquor.
Could be out Good there in guy. A couple weeks.
All right, break it down for us. Yeah. Jason Day's the guy, right? He's got to be the favorite.
Number one in the world, won his last two starts, comes in healthy, happy, games in order. I mean, if he's not the favorite, I don't know who he is. Now, I don't think he's a massive favorite because I think Rory McIlroy's got a great chance. I think Jordan Spieth's got a great chance. I think Ricky Fowler's playing well. I think Dustin Johnson's playing well. But yeah, if you had to pick one guy, I think you would take him.
Steve, where is Spieth right now coming into this? I mean, last year going into the Masters, I think he was runner up two tournaments in a row. He's got one win this year. Is he at the same level he was last year this time?
You know what? It's funny. I don't think his results are as great as he was last year coming into the Masters, but I think his mindset's completely different. He's won here before, and that's the biggest thing, because at this place, more than any other major venue, because You come back here each and every year. Familiarity is massive. Plus, mentally, when you know you've gotten it done here before, you can think about this golf course and this tournament a lot differently than the other players. So that's the first thing. The win came at Kapalua seemingly a long time ago, but it was 3 months. Is he putting as well? Nah, but he made everything last year. So he's not making everything, and everybody thinks, oh, what's wrong with his putting? His putting's fine. He'll get around here, and he'll be just fine. But it'll be interesting to see how he handles the pressure of being the defending champion. It's not easy. There's not a lot of oxygen here. You know, there's a lot of pressure here. So I think he'll be fine. I don't expect him to win, but I do think he'll be fine.
Steve, who would be the dark horse that you would think could possibly win? The Justin Roses, the Sergios, the Luke Donalds, anybody?
The Jim Hermans.
The
Jim Herman's not going to win here.
No.
I love Jim Herman. Who doesn't? It's a great story. But if Jim Herman wins, then that would be outrageous. You know what? In that group you just mentioned, I think Justin Rose has played well here before. I think Justin Rose knows the golf course well. It's one of those golf courses you just have to play. You know, I don't see Sergio breaking through and winning here. I think if Sergio ever is going to win a major, it's going to happen outside of the United States at the Open Championship. I don't think he's going to win here this week. I don't think Henrik Stenson is going to win here. I don't think a Martin Keimer is going to win here this week. But of those names you just mentioned, I think Justin Rose would be the one. By the way, I apologize about the noise. They have really funky. Yeah, who's banned? Who said earlier they're banned from Augusta? They're not allowed to come here.
Oh, that was me. I said I tried to walk on as a single, and they threw me out.
I can't believe that. That's shocking. They don't allow cell phones on the grounds, so I'm kind of hiding here, and there's noise behind.
It's pretty cool. No, it's pretty cool for you to do this. I appreciate it. I don't know how a young generation of players who live on their phones. I don't know how they do what they need to do at Augusta without their phones.
How about the fans?
Well, that's a good point. That's a very good point.
Are you kidding me? These people, you know, they changed that rule in the PGA Tour 3 years ago because they realized people weren't coming to as many golf tournaments because they didn't want to be not connected for like 8 or 10 hours. Here, these people show up at like 8 o'clock in the morning, and they don't leave here until 6:30 at night. And I'm telling you, you cannot have a phone on the ground. Literally, you will get thrown out, and there are people everywhere to throw you out.
Is that such a bad thing? I don't think it is.
No, God, it's a great thing.
Steve Sands, Golf Channel, live from the Masters all week. Thank you, sir.
You guys take it easy. Go Caps, all right? Come on, fellas.
All right, go Caps all the way to a runner-up finish in the Stanley Cup Final.
I thought he said go Cats.
If
someone ever has the opportunity to go to the Masters, go to a practice round as well as the actual tournament, because that's when you get to bring your phones and take pictures and bring your cameras.
You can't bring your phone during a practice round.
Yeah, you can.
You can?
Yeah, I'll show you my pictures.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
This is one of the most consequential presidential elections we've had in a long time. The stakes are really high.
Ted Cruz, without a doubt, is the candidate who can both win the nomination of this party, bring the party together at the convention, and defeat Hillary Clinton this fall.
You see the crowds here, it's just enormous, with thousands of people standing outside trying to get in. It just doesn't feel like second place to me.
Let us have the largest voter turnout on a primary day in Wisconsin history. Thank you all very much.
9-12, turnout key everywhere. How big is it going to be in Wisconsin, and how do the people in Wisconsin actually feel about it? You can get... Everybody wants to talk about the national perspective. Blah, blah, blah. I want to know from on the ground. Dan Bice writes about politics as well or better than anybody in Wisconsin history. And at Daniel Bryce, DanielBice, all over social media. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you, Steve?
Doing fine. Thanks for being on. So what about turnout? Expecting it to be huge.
It will be huge. It'll be probably the biggest since 1980 and maybe even bigger than that. You know, in the last 3 or 4 years, Wisconsin has really taken to elections. We hold elections even when we're not supposed to. You know, it's incredible, this the sort of turnout each of these presidential candidates is getting.
Andrea Darlis is here. Dan, say hi.
Hi, Dan. Good morning.
Hi. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. All right, so we've been talking about, well, Trump now for a while, but every different issue, every group he's managed to offend, most specifically women now, abortion, anti-abortion activists and abortion activists, depending on which side you stand.
Both sides hate him.
Flip-flopped four times. Is that right, Steve?
Five.
He counted five times.
I didn't know there were five
week.
Positions on abortion. He found five.
Right, so all right, so
it's been a terrible week for him here. You know, he had the abortion issue. It started off with Kissinger retweeting that Heidi Cruz picture.
Right.
He bombed on talk radio. He had no idea that talk radio in Milwaukee was behind Ted Cruz. He went on expecting a positive reception, didn't get it. And then he started slamming Scott Walker, which wasn't received very well by the Republican Party here. And then one thing that didn't get much attention was he had Sarah Palin come in and give a speech for him. And she was a complete disaster. I've said it was probably the worst political speech I've ever seen.
So was he losing female support at this point?
Well, he didn't have a lot of female support to start with.
In Wisconsin.
His numbers with women in Wisconsin, it's just incredible. There's the gap. Women in Wisconsin do not like him. And, you know, he's running ads in which women, he's got women front and center, but it's going to take more than just, you know, an ad or two to help him out. But, you know, at the same time, his bad week has brought out the best in Trump in that he doesn't want to lose. So instead of leaving the state, going to New York and moving on, he's doubled down. I hear he's going to be at Miller Park today for opening day. He's got two events. He's going to be on Sean Hannity tonight. And he's giving interviews with anybody he can. He just doesn't want to lose.
There's a political diversity to Wisconsin that Wisconsin doesn't get credit for. There's rural areas, but it's not all rural. There's Madison and Milwaukee, which, you know, have a much more urban sort of feel to it. And certainly Madison has that college flavor. So there's parts of the state Kasich might even grab, right? Even if there are only a few.
Right. Kasich is probably going to win the second congressional district, which is Madison. Cruz, unless something changes, Cruz will win statewide. Cruz will probably win the Milwaukee area, especially the Milwaukee suburban area. But Trump has a really good chance to win out state. He does extremely well in northern Wisconsin and western Wisconsin. So instead of just hitting Madison, Milwaukee, he's been out in Eau Claire, Wausau, a number of rural areas pitching his message.
The message that he's trying to land is, stomping on the same stuff that Cruz is trying to land, but Cruz appeals to the conservatives of Wisconsin. Why?
You know, he's not a great fit for Wisconsin conservatives. But there was a decision, it looks like a fairly orchestrated decision about 10 or 12 days ago to try to stop Trump. Not to support Cruz, but to try to block Trump. Because, you know, the Wisconsin Republicans, they are the Republican establishment. You've got Ryan Priebus here, Paul Ryan here, Scott Walker. And so they wanted to try to create a firewall to block Trump from getting the nomination. So they came together, decided to back Cruz. You know, he's his harder edges, and, you know, he's his very overt religious message doesn't play extremely well here. But, you know, Trump has been giving a lot of conservatives reasons to vote against him with each of the mistakes he's making.
Okay, so Dan, high voter turnout could be good, obviously, for Bernie Sanders and Ted Cruz. If they each respectively take Wisconsin, is that enough to take down Trump and Hillary? Most likely not.
No, I mean, this isn't a winner-take-all state. So Hillary's going to be fine. And in fact, you know, she's continued to campaign here. I saw her speak on Saturday night. She gave a great speech. She and Sanders spoke back-to-back. I think she outclassed him. She gave a better speech. She's going to walk away with delegates. She'll be fine. Trump's the one that has to be concerned. The question is, if he loses, is this an anomaly or is this a turning point? He's going to go on and win New York, but then Pennsylvania comes up right behind it. And so the question is this an indication that the party has mustered the forces and figured out a way to stop him?
It's good stuff from Dan Bice. You're still doing the No Quarter blog, right?
Yeah, I'm still doing it every day.
Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can get it online. And great stuff from you. Thanks for the perspective.
Sure, great.
All the best.
Thanks
for being on. at Daniel Bice, Daniel, B-I-C-E, on social media, and again, in the Milwaukee Journal. Let's do this at 9:18. We'll take a quick break, come back, and John Weideman. We'll see if he's recovered from one of the wildest games he's probably called in a long, long time. Weideman on our Blackhawks next, 720 WGN.
Ladd took it away. Quick pass to Olson, a 2-on-1 break over the Bruin line, right circle, tosses in front, Dave shoots, he scores!
Chris Dovey does production and imaging here for us. And what that means is he puts together the promotional announcements that you hear, promoting different parts of the day and things. And he's focused in on the John Weideman ha-ha, which is brilliant. It's brilliant because the world's a better place when Weideman's giving us a ha-ha. You know what I'm saying, Dave?
I don't think John pulls that out unless it's like either a really significant goal.
You got to earn your ha-ha.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah,
it's not just for any goal.
That's not a freebie. Yeah. The best in hockey joins us, John Weideman. Good morning, my friend.
Ha-ha! I guess it is pretty normal.
I hope you've heard some of the Duffy work, because it's fantastic.
I have. Duff is a true artist. And, you know, when I'm driving around and I hear them, I sit there for a second. And then when I hear that, inside I'm laughing out loud, but, you know, outwardly I'm cringing. But, I mean, he's so good at what he does, and really it's enjoyable to hear it.
I was in a building yesterday, so I missed the call. But, of course, I got it all in the post game. Compare it. How wild was yesterday's game compared to, I don't know, anything else you've seen this season or recently?
Yeah, it was a different kind of a game. I tell you, Steve, when they built the 6-0 lead, I thought to myself, okay, this game could turn ugly because, you know, the Bruins are the kind of a team, you know, historically, that if you build up a lead on them like that and you kind of put them in an embarrassing situation, they can start some scraps and then it can just turn nasty and, you know, guys can get hurt that way. And I was hoping that that wouldn't happen. Well, you know, I give the Bruins an awful lot of credit. They looked at the scoreboard, and they very easily could have said, well, next game. But instead, they started to fight back. And late in the second period, they got those two goals in 11 seconds. And to me, that was a wake-up call to the Blackhawks. That's where the Blackhawks bench should have been like, okay, boys, you know, we got to finish this game. We got to play all 60 minutes. The Bruins got two more in the third. And really, I think Judd Surratt put it perfectly when he said they had to sweat out a 6-4 victory. And so I think it was actually a really good lesson for this team late in the season, if there is such a thing, because there's no game that really is won until the final seconds are off the clock, and I think yesterday illustrated that.
John, you know, what I thought was impressive about it is this is a game, as important a game as it was for the Blackhawks from a number of standpoints, this was a game that Boston really needed.
Yeah.
If you look at the East, and for the Blackhawks to come out and deliver a roundhouse early and then that four-goal second period to really take control and put it out there far enough that Boston wasn't able to come back, I thought was very significant.
Yeah, I would agree, Dave. You have to think that Boston's probably a little bit nervous right now, knowing that their season is pretty much on the line from here to the end of the regular season. The Philadelphia Flyers, even though they lost yesterday, have been playing lights-out hockey. Pittsburgh has been playing very well as well. Detroit is one of those teams that they seem to know when to turn it on, so they've got three games left, and, you know, I think it's three or four games left, and they've got no – it's not going to be an easy road for any of the teams. So the loss yesterday for the Bruins, it was a tough one for them. I mean, they came into the game actually out of a playoff spot. So, I mean, they were looking up at the playoff pack, and I know that they were a little bit worried, and you know, you would think that if they had that kind of a feeling of urgency, they would have played a better game early on, but they just didn't, and the Blackhawks took advantage. But I'll say this, the Blackhawks looked like they were ready to play. You could tell from when they hit the ice and warm up, you could tell, you just kind of get that feeling, they're ready to come to play today. I think I said that on the broadcast too. So they won the game, and that's really all that matters.
So were you all set to call Marian Hossa's 500th goal on that 2-on-1 break with Taves?
I so was. I that's what I was thinking the whole way down, Dave. I mean, when he entered the right circle, I was ready to say, Hossa shoots, he scores, there's number 500. And he's such a class guy, Marian Hossa, such a great guy. He dished off to Taves, who was wide open to the left of the net. And, you know, if he doesn't make that pass and he shoots the puck, well, that's not a bad play either, but Hossa is such a team player. He's going to get his 500th. I think he knows that. I was disappointed that he was injured yesterday and couldn't finish the game, because I really felt that had he stayed in that game, we were going to be talking about his 500th goal. And what a day yesterday, by the way. Patrick Kane hits 100 points, first time in Blackhawks history since the 93-94 season when Jeremy Roenick did it. He had a four-point game. Artemi Panarin had a four-point game. And when the boys picked up the win, that was Joel Quenneville's 800th win. There's only two guys in NHL history that have at least 800 regular season wins. So great.
How about that? Yeah, all sorts of milestones. And then you have the linesman. And this is one of the great things of hockey. There's no better moment in hockey than at the end of the cup when you see the handshake line. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. You don't see it in any other sport. Boston gets tattooed yesterday. They almost come back. They don't. It's almost like a double punch in the gut. They get down 6-0. They lose 6-4. The last thing they want to do is hang around on the ice. They leave the ice, and a bunch of guys realize, hold on a second, we need to honor this linesman who's retiring. And they came. A bunch of the guys, almost the entire team, came back on the ice. So a salute to the Bruins and the Hawks.
Yeah, you know what, Steve? That's a great point, too. That's respect for the game, regardless of the final score, regardless of the circumstances. I think the Bruins get it, and I'm glad to see that. I was happy to see them all come over and shake Andy McKelman's hand. Andy, by the way, for those that don't know, he linesed his 1,500th and final game. There have been a couple of officials in the NHL that are retiring. Brad Lazarowicz is out along with Andy, and then there's a couple of others. But, to see that moment, that's really a rare moment in hockey, and so I hope some of the fans took that in, because you're not going to see that except for maybe once every couple of years, maybe even once every 5 to 10 years. I went to Andy's bash afterwards, and we had a great time down at the Palace Grill, George Lamparis's place on Madison. We had a great time. The place was packed, and it was just wall-to-wall Hawks fans and hockey people, and I'm telling you, it was the capper to a great day.
Wasn't it nice to see Jonathan Toews and Zdeno Chara out there to present him with the jerseys before the game, and then like 3 minutes in there, they're both in the box.
They want to kill each other.
Right.
Yeah, I found that to be kind of a poignant moment, too. I'm thinking, and Troy even said, he says, you may not want to go too much further with this engagement with Chara, because you may want to pick a different guy to joust with the sticks. But I think what Jonathan Toews was doing, and I like what he was doing. I mean, not only is he trying to set the example and lead the way for his team, but he was trying to get Chara off his game.
Yep.
And if you'll take a long look at that situation, Jonathan Toews, he's off the ice. The Blackhawks need him for sure. But Toews knew that the Bruins couldn't be without Chara. And so when Toews and Chara went to the penalty box, a different defenseman, Joe Morrow, I think is who it was, ended up playing in Chara's place, taking up those minutes. Well, that's where Patrick Kane stole the puck at the Blackhawks blue line and went in for that breakaway goal. That was a huge momentum turner for the Blackhawks. So a little clever ploy on the part of the captain.
Yeah, and let's not lose sight of the fact that when you poke the bear, Zdeno Chara, he's like a tree that can punch you. It's like you go and push a tree and it'll hit you. So there's nobody tougher than Toews, too. Look, it feels good. Keep that throat ready, buddy, because I got a feeling we're going to be hearing you right into June.
Well, you know what? I'm going to do my part, and I hope the listeners can put up with a raspy voice, because that may happen a time or two, but I'm going to do everything I can to protect it, and I'm really looking forward to the end of this.
You're the best. There's nobody close. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
John Weideman, your Chicago Blackhawks, heard here on Blackhawks Radio. We're back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
I didn't start it.
But sir, with all due respect, that's the argument of a 5-year-old.
I didn't start it. No, it's not.
The argument of a 5-year-old is he started it.
He was grabbing me. Am I supposed to press charges against him?
You look at that tape. He was very, very seriously maligned, and I think it's very unfair.
I got a very unfair question from somebody, but we don't even talk about that.
You know, I say we don't win anymore. We don't win. We never win.
I got the most votes. I should win. I mean, it's very simple. I got the most votes, and I didn't get the most delegates, right?
So the Republican Party hasn't treated me properly.
So good. So good. Time again for our regular feature.
Thank you, darling.
Today in Trump. Today in Trump includes the last few days of news about Trump that maybe we haven't gotten to. Why don't we start with last night's town meeting in Wisconsin? This is one of the many opportunities Trump took to speak to the Wisconsinites. And he tries, and again, I am amazed by this, because Trump has some sort of Cirque du Soleil flexibility. I don't know how you come up with five different opinions on abortion, five different positions on abortion. I don't even know how you do that. I didn't know there were five. But he was able to come up with five different positions. He updated it one more time last night.
Look, I'm pro-life. Ronald Reagan was pro-life, with the exceptions, okay? Life of the mother is, you know, rape, incest. So with the three exceptions, that was Ronald Reagan. And that's been me. And it's been me for quite a period of time. Then when they ask questions about, you know, different things, or they ask theoretical questions in theory, if you did this and if you did that and if you did that. And interestingly, frankly, look, nobody's going to do more for women than me. Nobody respects women more than me. And I took that answer, and I didn't like it because I think a lot of people didn't understand it. Women go through a lot. They go through a tremendous punishment of themselves. And I didn't like, because I wasn't sure if people would understand it. So I clarified it. But it was just a clarification, and I think it was well accepted.
Just, if he had a cologne, it would be called delusional.
Can I just say, speaking as a woman?
Yeah, go ahead.
I could think of a few other people who do more for women than Donald Trump.
Ah, just, what do you know? You're a woman.
Just a thought.
Yeah, he is. Nobody does more for women than Donald Trump. Nobody. Chris Wallace on the Fox Network yesterday morning, he talked to Trump. And in defense of Trump, yes, I said it. In defense of Trump.
What?
In defense of Trump. You had Ted Cruz the other day getting on Anderson Cooper about all the free press that Trump has gotten. But CNN, MSNBC, Fox, they've all pointed out the same thing. Cruz, Kasich, and all the other candidates while they were in had the same offer. You want to be on? You're on any day you want to be on. Open-ended offer. Trump's a guy that said yes to everything. Mm-hmm. Trump doesn't turn down. If there's a light and Trump thinks it's a camera, he'll cross against traffic. He'll do whatever it takes to get more Trump out there.
So put the invitation out there again.
He's invited here anytime. Anytime. I think we know how that's going to go. But Trump doesn't deserve to be ripped about the free press. The free press, he took the offer. However, Chris Wallace doesn't. This is the Fox Network now. Chris Wallace said to Trump yesterday, look, dude, the train's coming. See the light at the end of the tunnel? That's not light. That's a train. And it's headed right for you.
This may sound harsh, but are you in the process of blowing your campaign for president?
I don't think so. I just got great polls from NBC nationwide. I think that we're doing very well. Don't forget, you have been thinking about that or asking me that question numerous times over the last, since June 16th. I've had the statement made many a times. He just blew his campaign only to end up having higher poll numbers.
In the latest Fox poll, 67% of women nationally now have an unfavorable view of you. If you had purposely set out to turn off voters, especially women voters, over the last 2 weeks, I'm not sure you could have done a better job.
Well, you know, all I can do is do what I do.
Which is not a great answer. Now, Trump supposedly has a Trump card to play against Roger Ailes of the Fox Network. Roger Ailes of the Fox Network has been pretty tough on Trump. You know, the Megyn Kelly attacks, things of that nature. However, there may be an October surprise that Trump could pull at any time. Roger Ailes had an unauthorized biography written about him. His publicist at the time was thought to be a source for the biography. His publicist had a very good contract with Fox News. Ailes wanted him out, fired, wasn't getting anywhere with the negotiation, asked Trump to do the negotiation. This is how close Trump and Ailes were. So the publicist goes to Trump's office with the attorney. They sit down, they negotiate the out, but in the process, all of the behind-the-scenes secrets that Ailes didn't want in the book, including stuff that didn't make it in the book, end up coming out, and Trump knows everything.
Oh, the dish.
So if Trump has something to drop on Ailes that Ailes doesn't want going public, well, that could be a problem.
No kidding.
That could be an issue. That could be a deal. That's why the National Enquirer hasn't been tougher on Trump, by the way, because the guy that runs the Enquirer now is a longtime friend of Trump as well. So that's your Fox News angle for this. But there's another piece from the weekend that entertained me. Ivana Trump is speaking out.
Oh, Ivana, the ex-wife.
The ex-wife, married from 77 to, I think, 92.
Yeah.
And she says Donald wanted to be president back in the 80s. Said 5 years before our divorce, Reagan or somebody brought him a letter and said, you should run for president. So he was thinking about it then. He's been thinking about it for a long, long time. Trump and Ivana split up after Marla Maples and Trump had the affair. You know, that was wife number two. And she says, Ivana says, I have no problems with Melania. She said, I have no problems with her at all. She didn't do anything to me. I wish them well. Mm-hmm. She'll probably make a wonderful first lady. She said Donald still occasionally asks her for advice.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's two wives removed now. Removed now, don't forget.
Is that how that works?
Yeah, it was Ivana, Marla, and then Melania.
So if you say second cousin twice removed, it all relates back to Trump?
Yeah, there's a lot of water under that bridge.
Yeah. So as far as whether or not he's a feminist, this isn't going to help. He loves women, but he's not a feminist.
Oh, that's what Ivana said?
That's what Ivana said, yeah. And she was married to him for 15 years. Keep in mind, at one point, she said in her own book, and I don't know if it made the final draft of the book or not, that Trump raped her while they were married.
I remember that.
Trump went to get a hair transplant to some doctor that she recommended, and it was very painful, and it wasn't working out. This was before he started his big double comb over. By the way, that hair, man. Shave your head, dude. Oh. Give it up. But he supposedly came home after that, was in a lot of pain, didn't like something she said, and then sexually assaulted her.
Oh, this is while they were married?
While they were married.
Yeah.
You can be raped while you're married.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He has three kids with her.
With him.
I'm sorry, yes.
Yeah. And he has one with the
one with Marla
and one with
Melania.
Who's named Baron.
Baron.
And the other one's what? Tiffany.
That's Marla's
kid.
Yes,
right.
Tiffany.
That's right. But Ivana and Donald have apparently remained friendly through the years, you know, as long as the settlement's still in writing.
Of course.
But it's a fairly nice story, if you want to read it, from Ivana about her ex-husband, Don.
So Ivana says that Donald still confides in her and asks for advice.
Occasionally asks for advice, yeah.
That's interesting.
But he was thinking about running for president as much as 30 years ago. $9.55. Somebody sent me this list. I don't think we'll get to it, but it's about Baron Von Trump.
I think it's just, is it Von Trump? I think it's
Why not?
Baron Trump.
Why not Baron Von Trump?
Because you're confusing, I think, the Von Trapps.
Oh, is that different people?
Trumps. Yeah.
The Von Trapps and the Von Trumps?
Yeah, the Von Trapps were happy people.
I don't know if any of this is true, but it's entertaining. Baron has his own floor in the Trump Tower.
Is that true?
Not a penthouse suite. Not his own bedroom. He has his own floor.
What does it say on the elevator? Just you push the Trump button?
The B.
You push the Baron button? Yeah. He is 10 years old or 11 years old, and he is addicted to caviar.
Oh. Weren't we all at 10?
How great is that? That is fantastic. I don't even care if it's true. He's not raised by nannies. Melania seems to be a hands-on parent.
Yeah. Melania's a stay-at-home mom.
And she speaks five languages.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty impressive.
Very.
Yeah. I speak three.
Oh, what are they?
English, Canadian, and British.
Yeah. No, that's all English.
It is?
Yeah. Except when you do your Queen.
Oh, stop it with that, please. Moving to the White House would be a downgrade for Barron. He's grown up in a three-level penthouse on Fifth Avenue that resembles the Palace of Versailles. It has 24-karat gold and diamond accents, hand-painting ceiling murals, and gleaming marble. And I guarantee you not once Melania has ever said in a mom tantrum, this is why we can't have nice things.
He's gonna
because they're all nice things.
He's going to have a hard time living at the White House after having his own floor.
Yeah.
And then just getting one little room.
It's unbelievable. I need you to do this food plug in just a second, but first, is this the one I want? No, I want this one, don't I? Yeah, I'll do this one first, and then I'll do the other one. Did you see that? Is all this on the air?
This is all right now on the air, yep.
Timeshare exit team. Get out of the resort. It's not because you don't like it necessarily, because the maintenance fees went up. It's because the lifestyle for you has changed, and you're unable to use it every year. Maybe the resort fills up quickly. Timeshare Exit Team and TimeshareExitTeam.com are the way to go. Get out of that timeshare right now. You're going to sit down face-to-face with your personal client advisor for a free consultation. They're going to show you options. You're going to be able to discuss those options. And if you decide you want out, they have 100% guarantee that they're going to get you out or you get a complete refund. They don't get paid unless you are out of your timeshare. TimeshareExitTeam.com, TimeshareExitTeam.com. Ms. Sandberg.
Yes.
Somebody brought food today?
Yes, Billy Deck and our friends at Racket Bar and Grill.
Hi, Billy.
They brought us some Korean barbecue chicken lettuce wraps for you health nuts, rock corn shrimp, and buffalo chicken mac and cheese. So thanks for that.
That's in a green room right now?
It is.
Ooh. Okay.
So watch out, and everyone's going to come down and get it. Now that you gave the location.
Yeah. Andre and Dave are headed over there right now.
Mac and cheese.
And then you got a couple of things you want to give away before the show's over?
Yes. If you don't have any plans in April, I would like to give the seventh caller a pair of tickets to Sensory Overload at the Montgomery Club on April 14th. It's a unique three-hour foodie adventure that indulges the five senses and explores Chicago's culinary scene. Get tickets and details at chicagotribune.com/sensoryoverload. Also, you'll get a pair of tickets to the revival of Thornton Wilder's Pulitzer Prize-winning play, the American classic Our Town, playing April 8th through May 1st at Lila Arts Center in downtown Des Plaines. Get tickets online at Lila, that's L-E-E-L-A, artcenter.com. Seventh caller.
Seventh caller, 312-981-7200.